Good morning, Ms. Vermeulen. Is it Ms. Vermeulen? Mrs. Vermeulen from Gauteng. Let me start by introducing myself, and then the rest of the panel will introduce them. My name is Marentje Killian, chairperson of the subcommittee for this interviews for this morning. Member Stock.
Good morning, Mrs. Vermeulen. My name is Dikgang Stock. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, as well as a member of the subcommittee dealing with the interviews. Thanks.
Good morning, Mrs. Vermeulen. My name is Bridget Masango. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development and the member of this subcommittee. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Vermeulen. I'm Letitia Arif, member of the Portfolio and Social Development, VALCA.
Good morning, Ms. Vermeulen. I'm Dalmaine Christians. I'm a member of the Select Committee of the Social Cluster and also of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Automatica. I'm a member of Select Committee and the Subcommittee. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Mrs. Vermeulen, welcome, relax, take a deep breath if you need some water, take your water. Tell us a bit about yourself and why are you interested in committing your time and energy to serve on the CDA board, and also, if appointed, what will you bring into the work of the CDA? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this great opportunity. I really am grateful to meet you. I feel like I'm setting my back to everybody else, so I just want to say good morning to everyone. So my name is Audrey Vermeulen. I'm a social worker by profession. I studied at UJ many years ago, and then I finished my master's degree at Wits University. And I have been working in the substance-use disorder field for going on 26 years now. So I always say that you either love this field or you don't like it at all. So for me, I love this field. I've got a passion for what I do. And I've been very fortunate that through the years I've had many exposure to different kinds of treatment settings. So I've worked in an inpatient treatment facility. I've worked in outpatients, community-based, and then I've also, since for the last 4 years, I've been working at the Sanger National Office. So I'm situated in Lyndhurst, and I'm the national coordinator for the organization, and our main aim is to do prevention and treatment of substance use disorders, and we also, as the main overseeing organization, we've got 31 members of the treatment facilities that's part of our structure. So we just came from our very big meeting yesterday as well, our biannual assembly, And we're looking forward to be part of the CDA, and there's many reasons for that. We've been represented before also by two previous members, Mrs. Carol De Toy and then Mr. Gert Kruger. But unfortunately, Mr. Kruger is resigned. He's resigned from the CDA, and he's retiring, actually. He's looking forward to spending time with his grandchildren. But our main aim for definitely from my side, I want to be part of the CDA because I do believe that as a national organization, we can look at policy development, we can assist in strengthening what the CDA is trying to achieve through the National Drug Master Plan. So from our side, I feel that it will also assist our organization as well to make sure that we are doing what we are supposed to do and in line with that.
Thank you very much. Can we move to question number?
Thank you. Ms. Vermeulen, the Central Drug Authority was established by an Act of Parliament. Which Act is that, and what does the Act seek to achieve? You have 5 minutes to answer this question.
Thank you very much for that question. The CDA is, well, the whole strategy started with the Substance Abuse Act 70 of 2008, and that is where the CDA is described and the roles and responsibilities is described in the Act. We've also been instrumental in providing inputs in the new proposed policy that is on the table as well, to look at how should it be structured and how we should also look at other aspects of the Act as well. So the whole Act is around is not only around the CDA, but it also looks at registration of treatment facilities. It looks at community-based, inpatient and outpatient-based facilities that and what they should do. It also looks very much on what I'm interested in as a social worker, is looking at voluntary and involuntary admissions of clients and how to assist clients to access treatment and how to make sure that they get the help that they need. So from the CDA's point of view in the Act, it's very clear that the CDA is responsible for the strategy, the overall strategy of the National Drug Master Plan, and that is our blueprint as a country in terms of what we want like to achieve, you know, and how do we like to address this pandemic that we are facing as a society.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Don't worry. In your own assessment, do you think that the CDA performs its mandate efficiently? If yes, how so? And if not, what is the shortcoming? Then you can highlight both with regards to the mandate as well as ensuring compliance, accountability and monitoring, development and implementation of the department's drug master plan by national and provincial drug master plans by provincial forums. And how are you propose to address these shortcomings?
That's a long mouthful. I'll try and help. Yes, I do. I think there's more than one question in there. If I can start with the CDA, your first part of the question was how effective. Please back it up. Thank you. I will listen now, Madam Chair. Just want my thing. So from my personal view, I believe that the CDA partially achieved what they are meant to do. Unfortunately, we didn't see the reduction in substance use disorder in our country, and I think that is was part of trying to see how do we minimize that. I do think also the National Drug Master Plan came out very late. You know, it didn't meet its deadlines and its targets, and it didn't have an implementation plan as part of the previous one. So I'm glad to see that that is now changed in the new one that we have, and that makes it a lot easier to monitor and to evaluate the achievements of the CDA. But I do believe that timing was an issue, you know, that there was a lot of concerns raised, and I do realize that there probably was a lot of debate. But looking as an outsider, we didn't know what was the delay or what was the whole concerns around why the National Drug Master Plan was delayed. Also, I think there's a shortcoming in terms of the local drug action committees from my side. I don't believe that they are functioning as well as they should be on ground level, and that it's because in the Act it's now allocated to the municipalities, you know, and they are supposed to oversee the local drug action committees, and that's not happening the way it's supposed to. So from my side, I feel there's a gap, you know, in terms of getting the community involved in resolving the issues around substance use disorder, and really who knows best than the members of that community, what are their challenges, what do they go through, and how to deal with it most effectively. How I can fix it, I think, was part of your... I think it's all... Thank you, in terms of... So I think already the implementation plan helps to monitor the progress made from the CDA side, and one can then be more accountable, I think, as a committee to communities, you know, to really say this is what's been achieved. And I think that is a great improvement from the last National Drug Master Plan that we've seen. I do believe with the local drug action committees, what I can propose is that we look at other models that's used in other countries as well that could be effective in strengthening the LDACs. The LDACs are merely a structure at this point, in my opinion, and I believe they don't have actual tools, or they don't have techniques, and so that is what I think of. We make use of a model called CASCA, the Coalition for Anti-Drugs in Communities, and the CASCA model could be joined with the LDAC, and it will strengthen the LDAC because it gives them the tools. It gives them the ability to do a community survey, to see where are the hot spots, where are the areas they need to focus on, but it also gives them that intersectorial collaboration, because at least 12 sectors must be represented on a CATCA, a coalition. And so I believe that one can strengthen the LDACs. A lot of work needs to be done there. But that is how we're going to address substance use disorders, not by treatment only, because treatment is putting a band-aid on the issue for me. You know, it's really going back to our families, our communities, and how do we address it on that level and mobilize our communities and strengthen them.
Mrs. Vermeulen, the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 represents a multi-sectoral approach to create a South Africa free from the harms associated with drug use, drug misuse, and drug abuse. The plan observes national and international policies, conventions, plans to ensure respect and dignity for all the people of South Africa. So if you are appointed as a member of the board of the CDA, you will be expected to implement the authority's mandate. So if you could please share with the panel your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you think the CDA should achieve these objectives. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. I think that collaboration is a very important part of the CDA's function that they need to do. But looking at the overall principles, there's the underlying principles, which I think is wonderful, that's been added to the National Drug Master Plan, and that is to really look at that multi-sectoral approach where everybody works together and we have a common goal together and achieving that together. So I believe that is one of them. And then putting people first, for me that's also very important from the principal side, to really look at the needs of our service users and really how do we meet those needs and not only look at it from what we think as professionals should be done, you know, but also getting them to be part of this and to participate and to be included. So looking at the overall objectives, we're looking at demand reduction strategies that needs to be focused on as one of the objectives of the CDA. And I think a lot can be done for prevention, especially there's another gap for me, you know, that we haven't really focused a lot of our attention on prevention services, and that's really the core of demand reduction for me. So from a CDA point of view, I would like to see that strengthened and that we see prevention as a science, you know, and we understand that the impact of prevention programs also need to be measured so that we are able to make sure that when we do get international parties or relationships going, we can understand that our work is worthwhile and we do have an impact in reducing the harms caused. We also have a big part of the demand reduction is also treatment, you know, so that's the other part of it, and looking at the continuum of care and making sure that over that continuum of care, people have access to treatment, people are able to complete treatment services. Very important for me is the aftercare component that's neglected, you know, so I do believe that aftercare is the answer to successful treatment, and that should be also strengthened, and that is part of what is also the CDA's mandate as well, to look at that continuum of care and how to make sure there's effective demand reduction. There's also the supply reduction section of the objective, and that is to look at law enforcement and their role that they play in making sure that there's none of the products available to our communities and our youth, especially our children. So for me, that's a very big part. Some of the others that I think what's added for me in this one is some of the needle exchange, OST programs that's been introduced, and that is another form of treatment and really meeting people where they are at, you know, where they are still using the substances.
The plan, as I mentioned earlier, also speaks to South Africa being a signatory of international conventions. How, in your view, would that particular aspect of the plan improve or help in CDA being able to achieve the objectives of the plan?
There is definitely a lot of treaties that our country signed, and it goes back to 1960-odd, I think. So we've signed on different levels that we as a country will look at fighting against illicit drug use specifically, and that's why we've got 26th of June, where we celebrate that as a country. I think that we need to look at our international partnerships there, the United Nations. We need to look at how do we stay involved there, how do we learn from other countries in terms of what strategies have worked for them. And it's really about sharing of experiences and what can work. And I also believe that the African Union can be of assistance as well, that we look at not only always we're looking always at America or UK, but we need to look at African solutions, you know, so looking at the AU and what other countries in Africa is doing regarding this. We can learn a lot from countries like Kenya, for instance, Mauritius as well, so they've got very good strategies that they have implemented. So I believe it's again about being present on those platforms as the CDA and being the voice for our communities, you know, because that's what I feel is the role of the CDA, is talking for the people that can't talk for themselves.
Prior to the review of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017, a need to conduct an evaluation was prioritized to assess how it was implemented, and subsequent to that, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation in partnership with the Department of Social Development commissioned an evaluation of NDMP 2013-2017. So the question would be, what were the key findings and recommendations of that implementation evaluation?
I'm going to go on memory. Please forgive me if I forget some of it. But one of the most important parts was that there was no implementation plan, you know, to measure the progress that was made. So that was one of the key recommendations. They were also looking at getting all the stakeholders involved and really giving everybody their roles and duties to be described more effectively. I can look at my document, can I? To look at the, but that is, those were some of the ones that I remember from reading the document. And we didn't include people using, you know, so we never asked them what they would like to see in a document like this. So that was also part of it.
Thank you. Question number four.
Thank you, Chair. What is your understanding of good governance, including its main features, and how would you ensure good governance in the CDA?
Thank you for that question. That's a very big task to do. But I think the governance of the CDA, it's to do with leadership and making sure that everybody understands their roles, responsibilities, what is expected of them. So I do believe that that is part of good governance, is to do that. And there's always, with governance, there's always challenges, you know. So one needs to look at how do you resolve challenges, how do one address that as a committee together. But I think it starts with a commitment from the members to make sure that everybody on that committee is dedicated, committed to what needs to be achieved, but there must be good leadership, you know. So it starts with the leadership for me, and one needs to make sure that this leadership is aware of their roles, the responsibilities, they know what they can do and can't do. So it's very clear on the conduct as well, you know, that you look at that as well. Other parts of it is to do with the administration part of it, making sure meetings are run, that you have regular inputs from everybody, and that you are able to make decisions, you know, and have a solid foundation to make decisions from. I don't know if there's a constitution of the CDA, how it's structured, but I suppose that guides you as well in terms of how meetings should be run, how often it should be compiled, and how the administration works of these meetings.
Are you finished? Thank you. Can we move to question? Can we move to question 5.1?
Thanks, Chairperson. Mrs. Vermeulen, what are the key issues affecting young people, their families and communities regarding substance abuse? And how would you advise the government to deal with these issues? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you for that question. Good. So how much time do we have for this question? 3 minutes. Right, from my side, I believe that the youth are severely affected. If we look at our secondary statistics, we see that it mainly affects our youth. And that has got to do with many social issues that we are currently experiencing as a country, high unemployment rates, severe poverty that we are seeing. We're also looking at family structures really becoming dysfunctional at times, and children having to navigate through very difficult times on finding themselves and really finding what they need in life. A very big, what I've seen with the youth, in my opinion, is that they've lost hope for the future. You know, they don't see a future for themselves. They don't see any prospects, you know, or any opportunities for them. So I think that has created for a gap for me with some of the youth, that they don't feel they know where they belong in our society. So I would recommend that we involve youth a lot more in campaigns, in the CDA even, you know, that we have a youth portfolio, that we really make sure that the youth have a platform as well, and that we need answers from the youth. You know, we are all adults in this room, and we can't possibly know what's going to work for them. And we know that technology is a great way to reach the youth, to communicate with them, and we need to find ways to really communicate with our youth. The old techniques don't work, you know, the old strategies we've tried doesn't work anymore. We need to get the language that they understand, you know, and that is what I would recommend to government, is that we need to involve youth more, we need to get them involved in programs and looking at solutions going forward. And that is a big task to do, you know, because I think we have to look at our local drug action committees as well. How can they be capacitated to do that and really involve them, you know, also at that level?
Thank you. Question 5.2.
In your opinion, what is the state of public rehabilitation centers in the country? Are there any challenges with regard to access to public rehab centers in South Africa? If yes, what are those challenges and how would you advise the country to address those challenges?
I just wanted to clarify the first part of your question, please.
What is the state of public rehab center in the country? Are there any challenges with regard to access to public rehab center in South Africa?
Thank you for that question. I want to say that the National Department of Social Development has come a long way in making sure that we do have now facilities in every province, which we didn't have before. You know, so we do see that as a great achievement, you know, that we do now have facilities. Some of the challenges we are faced with in some of these public centres are still that we have capacity building of staff is needed. You know, the staff is not always trained, and this is a specialised field. So for me, the capacity building is a big concern, and there are national treatment programs, but I don't think they are always utilized to the best of their capability. So I believe it's got to do with the staff and capacity building of the staff at these centers. Also, another problem is that we look at the needs of the client, and if now everybody thinks that you need to go into an inpatient facility to get help, but you can also do it on an outpatient facility depending on your stage of dependency. So for me, I think we still have a long way to go with assessment and sending people to the right treatment centres and getting the right help for them. You know, so it doesn't help you putting a child that's experimenting with cannabis with somebody who's using heroin or niobe, because now you're exposing that child to to another form. You know, they learn a lot more in that center, and they shouldn't be learning that. You know, now they know where's the best heroin to buy, or nayopi to get, how to use it. So we have to be looking at our capacity building of our staff at these centers, and let them really understand that this is addiction is a science, there's evidence for it, and it's a disease. You know, so there I think we still need to do a lot more work. And then definitely looking at some of the other challenges are that the security at some of these facilities needs to be looked at. You have a lot of people in the centers, and sometimes there are things that happen that shouldn't be happening, so I believe one needs to look at that as well. So my recommendation is to focus on capacity building of staff and looking at treatment programs that's effective and evidence-based.
Thank you, Member Aris.
Thank you. Mrs. Samelin, one of the challenges facing the country is the lack of a comprehensive national statistics on the prevalence of substance and drug abuse. How can the Central Drug Authority play a role in this regard?
I agree with you completely that we do not know the extent of the problem in our country. The only statistics we do have available is on Sekendu, and that's mainly treatment data, so it doesn't show us any data in regards to how many people are actually physically using. So my recommendation to the CDA would be that we need to do a national household survey. And that is done in other countries as well, where we really then ask people questions around their relationship with substances, and that will give us more accurate statistics around what we are dealing with, the extent of the problem in our country, and how to tackle that. So I also believe that we do need a centralized data system in the country, and that is not there currently. And we need to capture all the relevant data from all the different Department of Social Development stats from the different provinces. That needs to be all in a central system, and we don't have that at the present moment to really see what is the full picture. So that will be my two recommendations.
Thank you, Member Stock.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, or good morning, Ms. Vermeulen. It's still morning, okay. Now, recently there's been a debate in the public discourse regarding the court judgment on the decriminalization of marijuana, cannabis for personal use. So I would like you to share your opinion with the panel regarding that court judgment. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. If you're asking me as a person, I was devastated by the outcome of the court case. As a mother, you know, as well, I'm worried about my child and his future. So on a personal level, it wasn't a good day for me that day. So, I think that I understand the decriminalization of cannabis quite well, that it is about making sure people have access to treatment rather than let them have a criminal record. So I'm in agreement with that completely. But I think it was people now in the public domain believe that they can now use it the way they want to without the consequences, and that sent out the wrong message for me. You know, that cannabis is still safe, there's no harms to it, and coming from a treatment point of view for so many years, I've seen the opposite of that. You know, so in terms of what I've seen in the centers is that that's where the problem starts. Actually, it starts with tobacco first and alcohol, and then you move on to cannabis and then exploring other substances. So for me, it was it was that that ruling was upsetting as an individual, and how do I protect my child from this? But on the other hand, as a professional, I realized why this judgment came through, and it was based on people's their rights, you know, their rights to make decisions about what they put in their body and so on. But we, we have a responsibility to our children still to protect them, you know, from that as well, because they're underage, and cannabis affects the development of the brain as well. And we know that the brain is so complex, and that adding cannabis to it affects the developing brains of our children, you know. So I'm quite concerned about that. I think that this is the first step in decriminalizing all drugs, you know. So if I could have a crystal ball, you know, to think that there's a movement towards decriminalizing everything, and the next day you could see that it was also economically driven, you know, the whole court case as well from my side.
Thank you. During the COVID-19 pandemic, government introduced a number of lockdown regulations to deal with the spread of the virus or to contain the virus. Now, I want us to be more specific in your response. The introduction of the lockdown regulation on the sale of alcohol and tobacco. So I want you, in your response, you must focus more on the tobacco ban, the lockdown regulation which was introduced regarding that. So if you were to advise government how to deal with the sale of tobacco during a lockdown regulation, during a pandemic, if it persists in the future, what would be your advice? Thanks.
Yes, sir. You want me just to comment on tobacco, not alcohol as well? Wonderful, thank you. I think this is what we as Sanka have been busy with since the lockdown, is really talking to media also about the ban and how that has affected treatment and how it's affected our clients. So from my side, the sale on alcohol, we support that, and tobacco, because we knew that this is part of the Disaster Management Act, and that it's about keeping our people healthy, you know, and really protecting them from that side. And so from my side, I support what was done, and I think that we could have done it a little bit differently in terms of creating more public awareness around why the decision was taken, and also allowing more leniency, you know, in terms of some of the stricter parts of it. If you look at lockdown 5 and 4, where people were arrested and so on. So looking at that, I feel that we could have done more public awareness around why this was done, you know, so, and also to prepare us for this. You know, it wasn't, none of the people were prepared for it. Even our people that are chronic users, they weren't prepared for the lockdown as well. Otherwise, they would have been able to, in advance, seek treatment or to reduce the intake of what they've taken. And the opposite of this, unfortunately, had a negative spin-off, you know, that we saw people drinking sanitizers and being admitted to hospital because they were so desperate for alcohol. People reverted to brewing their own concoctions at home, which is dangerous, and we've seen deaths with people doing that. And also you saw people illegally buying alcohol, you know, and so it really didn't send out the right message. So I think it's got to do with how we communicate with the public and how, what messages we send to them of why we're doing this. The same with tobacco. Same happened there, where people were selling tobacco products at 3 times the price, you know. So and people can't just stop. And there's no formal cessation programs available. So we must make sure that there are things people can fall back on, you know, if they do have to quit nicotine, that we did have programs in place for them to do so. Thank you.
Thank you for for honoring this interview. Is there anything that you want to ask the panel or any... statement or something that you want to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say I'm so grateful for this opportunity, and just talking to you is already for me an advantage, you know, to really talk about my opinions and what I think could be possible solutions going forward. So I just want to thank this panel as well for a great opportunity. Thank you.
Which of the three state candidates, please?